right. Good morning. Good morning. You may be seated. Thank you, Cliff. Thank you, band. All right. Hi, my name's Tyler Crandall. I'm the youth pastor here at Commonway Church. And right now we're in the middle of a series called Uncommon Prayer. And a couple weeks ago, Lisa taught us about adoration. And we were encouraged to simply notice the beauty of Jesus in the things around us, in nature and in stories and in people and scripture and music and poetry. And when we notice, we have the opportunity to adore. We were encouraged to notice beauty and respond with a simple wow. And just a show of hands, who was able to try that out? Anybody? A few of us? Good. Lisa was worried that no one would raise their hand, but we've done it. Some of us have done it. So way to go, guys. I was able to do this, not to humble brag or anything, but one of the ways that Lisa invited us to do this was to watch an episode of The Chosen and just kind of see what stood out to us. And so the youth group and I, we've been watching an episode each week for the last few weeks. And as I watched episode number 3, it was this episode where Jesus spends a week with a bunch of kids. And I was just really struck by the way that Jesus met these kids with such warmth and such humility. He invited them to spend the whole week with him, and they were able to ask him any kind of questions that they wanted. And as kids do, they asked questions that as adults we know aren't polite, like, well, how do you make money? Things like that. But he was just so warm. He invited them to work on some wood carving projects with him. And as I watched, I thought about my favorite verse, which is Matthew 11, 28 to 30. Now, in the Message version, I love the way that it puts it. Part of it says, walk with me and work with me. Watch how I do it. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me and you'll learn to live freely and lightly. And I said, wow. As I watched these kids with Jesus learning and practicing unforced rhythms. And then last week, Corey Andree taught us about fasting. And we learned that though it's uncommon now, the practice of fasting, thanks Dallas, would have been really common for Jesus and for his ancestors, and then for those who came after him. We learned that we fast to grow in holiness and as a training, as a way to amplify God's voice to us and our voice to God. And we learned that Jesus encourages secret fasting, where you don't make a big production out of it. You don't walk around all downcast and tell everybody how you're fasting. And so out of respect for that, I won't ask for a show of hands for who practiced any fasting last week. And that was a joke, but it didn't land, and that's okay. We're used to that. All right, so today, our uncommon prayer series brings us to silence, which, you know, that joke not landing, that's a good way to practice silence. In preparation for this message, I read Ruth Haley Barton's book that's called Invitation to Silence and Solitude, and then I also read a section from Adele Aylberg Calhoun's book, Spiritual Disciplines Handbook. And I'm going to be leaning on those both really heavily. They were really helpful books as I prepared. And I'm going to be sharing some stuff from that. And it's actually kind of fun. This little book was actually mentioned in the, was mentioned in the big book as a great resource for more information about silence and solitude. All right. Silence is this thing that's really, really good for us, but it's also really hard to come by because we live in a world that is noisy and fast-paced, and productivity and the ability to multitask, those are things that are elevated to, like, I don't know, exemplary status if you have those traits. And there's constant stimulation and distraction, and sometimes it can feel like there's about a million things all vying for our attention at the same time. Personally, I'm almost always listening to something. Like, I'm a big podcast guy, and I like listening to music too, and I listen to stuff while I shower, while I mow the lawn, while I do the dishes, and for sure when I'm driving. And can anybody relate to that? just constantly listening to stuff. Thank you. Yes, an enthusiastic hand up from Mike. So for me, it's actually just muscle memory at this point to get in my car and immediately turn on my little Bluetooth receiver so that I can listen to something. You know, even just a trip 2 minutes down the road to go to Payless, I'm still going to push down that little button until it says connected, and then I'm going to start listening to something. And before you give old Pastor Tyler too much credit, it is almost never a sermon, and it's rarely worship music. I would say 8 times out of 10, it's a podcast about the NBA, or some kind of comedy podcast, or something about like music production. Occasionally, it's music from one of the playlists that I've created, but it's almost never spiritual. Okay, so during this past week, I was trying to be more conscious of this and trying to practice more silence in my life. Because most of the time, even during this week when I was trying to be intentional, I would still get in my car, and before I even had a conscious thought, I was still connected. Now, I hadn't picked out what I was going to listen to, and I would catch myself most of the time. This one time, I was driving from Yorktown, and I was driving to one of my spots on the river, and I purposely had the stereo off, and I was just trying to drive and notice. And I noticed this car in a driveway, and it had a shredded tire. And I said out loud, even though I was by myself, "Oof, that does not look good." That quickly turned into a dumb little song that went like this. That did not look good, that did not look good, that did not look good at all. That did not look good, that did not look good, that did not look good at all. And before you think I'm just like making this up, this is 100% true. I even voice recorded a memo so I would remember the catchy tune. But in that moment, I realized like this is not silence. The dictionary, it defines silence like this: absence of noise or sound, stillness. And that's a pretty good launching off point for us, but for many of us, the kind of absolute silence that I picture there, an actual absence of sound or noise, it's really, really hard to come by. Like, if not impossible, unless you're in a sensory deprivation tank or you're in the vacuum of space, there's always noise around us. And so for the sake of this morning, we're going to think about the practice of silence like this: attending and listening to God in quiet, without interruption and noise. Silence provides freedom for us from speaking, as well as from reading and listening to words or music. And we often think of prayer as talking to God. You know, as a youth pastor, that's often how we've defined it to kids. Prayer is just talking to God. And it is that. But sometimes prayer doesn't involve words at all. There was this great exchange once between Mother Teresa and famed TV reporter Dan Rather. And I've read a couple different transcripts, so if this one doesn't totally match what's on the screen, that's okay. But Dan Rather says, "Okay, so you say you pray all the time, but when you pray to God, what do you say?" And Mother Teresa says, "I don't say anything. I listen." And Dan Rather says, kind of takes a pause, and he goes, okay, when you pray to God, what does he say to you?" And she responds, "He doesn't say anything. He listens." And then there's a long pause, and Mother Teresa says, "And if you can't understand that, I cannot explain it to you." So silence, it is a type of prayer, but it's one that takes practice to develop because it's really foreign to us. Most of the time, silence and solitude go hand in hand because it's much, much easier to be silent if you are all alone than when there are other people around. I work in an office with myself and Jill and Christy, and when all three of us are there, it is not silent. And even if it is quiet for a while, someone is inevitably going to say, "Huh, we were working pretty quiet just now." Practicing silence, it takes patience and it takes waiting, and those things are uncomfortable for many of us. Silence and waiting, they feel unproductive, and it's hard to tell if we're doing anything. But you know, when you have that really close friend that you can just be with, and you don't really have to say anything, and yet it still feels safe and good, Or you've got that one relative that at the family gathering really just gets it, and you don't have to have a bunch of small talk. You can just be together. Or for those of us that are married with your spouse, you don't always have to be talking to know that the other person is there and that they love you and they care for you. And it's like that with God too. We don't need to say anything sometimes. But just like with that close friend or that relative or that spouse, the comfort level in silence doesn't just start immediately. It can be awkward and uncomfortable for a time. But as you practice that, as well as the other disciplines which God gives us, as we practice those things, you strengthen your relationship with Him. And eventually, you can get to a place where silence with Him just feels right. The practice of silence and solitude isn't something that God demands of us. We're not coerced into it or manipulated into it. But instead, it's something that He invites us to. And doesn't it feel good to be invited to something? It's as if someone's saying, I thought of you, and I want your presence so much that I'm going to invite you. Psalm 46, it has a verse that might be very familiar to many of us. It says, be still and know that I am God. The psalmists, though, in the rest of this psalm, they paint a really intense picture. I don't know if you've ever dug into this particular psalm, but before we get to the be still and know that I am God part, there's imagery of roaring waters and earthquakes, conflict with battles and fortresses and shields and fire. Verse 6 is particularly hardcore. It says, nations are in uproar, kingdoms fall. He lifts His voice, the earth melts. But then at the end, psalm, they remind us that God says, be still and know that I am God. And I read that like a reassurance. Be still and know that I am God. I've got this. I've got you. And that is our invitation. And as we RSVP, yes, to this invitation to be still and know, we strip away some of the noise and some of the distraction, and we become more open to God. Susan Muto says, in a noise-polluted world, it is difficult to even hear ourselves think, let alone try to be still and know God. Yet it seems essential for our spiritual life to seek some silence, no matter how busy we may be. Silence is not to be shunned as empty space, but to be befriended as fertile ground for intimacy with God. Now, you probably noticed that I was shaking this jar for a while. And if that was the only thing you were able to notice, I apologize. I'm done with it now. But this is my little Mr. Wizard moment. These three jars are all river water from one of my spots at the White River. I went out in the river and I got it all. It was actually kind of hard to get water that was gross. It was all coming up pretty clean, so I had to stomp around in my big boots and get it all worked up. But this particular jar here has been sitting still since Friday. And I don't know, Glenn, are we able to zoom in on these so we can see them a little more? Oh yeah, that's what I'm talking about. All right, so perfect. So jar one here has been sitting still since Friday. Jar two has been sitting still since I started talking. You know, Dallas came up, gave it one more hearty shake. And then jar three, I've been shaking, or Malachi has been shaking the whole time. And so this paints a really beautiful picture of what can happen when things are still. The sediment, it can settle down to the bottom, and then the waters become clear. And the same thing is true for our lives. As we are still, there's an opportunity for things to become more clear. In the rhythm of practicing silence and solitude, in the being still and knowing, we can find rest. And just like these jars, the more often we're able to stop for a bit and be still, the clearer things are. in silence and solitude, we find rest for our bodies. Our bodies and our minds and our hearts and our souls are often tired. There's good tired. That's the kind of tired that you experience after a job well done. It's the kind of tired that you have after you've had a really good workout or after a week where you've just checked off all the boxes on your to-do list. This kind of tiredness is temporary, and with healthy rhythms of rest and recuperation, we can bounce right back. But there's also dangerous tired. And this is a state of chronic inner fatigue that accumulates over months and months. Sometimes it presents itself as physical exhaustion, but other times it can look sneaky. It can look like excessive activity and chronic overworking. And those are things that in our culture, let's be honest, are celebrated. When we're dangerously tired, though, we can feel out of control. We can't relax. We can't keep ourselves from checking email one last time or sending that one last text. We can't stop cleaning or doing repairs around the house. And the idea of taking any time off, let alone a full day or a full week, seems impossible. And so we rarely, if ever, take a real break or a vacation. Instead, we often work through holidays and through break times. And before we move on, I want to pause for a moment and think about this. Where do you fall on this continuum of tired? You know, we've got fully energized and refreshed. That's when you're firing on all cylinders, but you don't feel exhausted. You can stop and rest. There's good tired, which we talked about. You've done a good job and you're tired, and then you rest and you're back to fully energized. There's drifting towards dangerous tired, where you're more than just tired, you're like weary. And then there's fully in a state of dangerous tired. So just a second, take a look at that. This is not a time to berate or judge yourself. It's not a time to jump into problem-solving mode. This is not a time to start thinking about all the reasons that you can't be still. Just notice. Be honest with yourself and with God right now. And as you think about this, it could be helpful to pray, "Dear God, this tiredness is what's true about me right now. Will you please meet me here?" No matter what state you're in here, silence and solitude gives us the opportunity to rest in God. You know, our spiritual journey, it's taken in the vehicle of our physical bodies. And when we make silent prayer a part of the rhythms, we're able to experience rest in our bodies. And when that happens, we can have reduced stress, decreased blood pressure, lowered heart rate, better sleep, and natural healing. Like our body has a chance to heal the things that are hurting us. Lately, Psalm 131 has been coming up a lot in my life, and I've been thinking about it. And particularly verse 2, which says, "I have calmed and quieted myself. I am like a weaned child with its mother. Like a weaned child, I am content." And this picture of a satisfied baby just resting against her mother, it's a picture of this rest that we're invited to in silence and solitude. Sorry, I just saw one of my youth kids lean up on her mom, and it tickled me. All right, so in addition to rest for our bodies, practicing silence and solitude can also help us to experience rest for our minds. Our minds are always busy trying to control things and figure things out and solve problems and categorize and sort. And when we practice silence, it's a chance to just give our minds a break. Back to Psalm 131, this time verse 1 says, "My heart is not proud, Lord. My eyes are not haughty. I do not concern myself with great matters or things too wonderful for me." The mind is not bad. Being an intellectual is not bad. Being a thinker is not bad. In fact, that's the way many people connect with God the most. You know, we are to love the Lord our God with all our heart, with all our soul, with all our mind, and with all our strength. But as Barton says in her Invitation to Silence and Solitude book, in silence, we give in to the fact that our words can never contain God or adequately describe our experiences with God. And sometimes we need to just give our minds permission to stop. Rest for our minds can lead to clarity, to time to process our emotions, and to better decision making. So right now you might be thinking, this is a very cool TED talk, Tyler, but where's Jesus in this message? And to that query, I have two answers. Number one is that TED is actually going to be talking next week, and so this isn't a TED talk. And two, I know, that's a groaning kind of, my wife is shaking her head. I even had in my notes, hold for applause, not applause, hold for laughs. Okay, but number two, we're going to talk about Jesus right now, all right? So I just didn't want to be talking about Jesus while I shook a jar because that felt weird. So Jesus, he is one that practiced silence and solitude regularly. The Gospels, they tell us of lots of times of him doing this. And so we're just going to do a quick survey of times that Jesus was at least in solitude, and that would lead me to believe he was also practicing silence in those times. So here we go. From Mark 1:12, at once the Spirit sent him out into the wilderness. Very early in the morning, Jesus left the house and went to a solitary place, Mark 1:35. He stayed outside in lonely places, Mark 1:44. So by the way, Mark is like the most fast-paced of all the Gospels. I mean, we're already into like Jesus being a grown-up here, and it's the first chapter, and he is recognizing that Jesus had a rhythm of slowing down and being by himself. Anyway, he stayed outside in lonely places. Jesus went out of the house and sat by the lake. He withdrew privately by boat and went to a solitary place. That's from Matthew 14. Let's see. After he dismissed the crowds, he went up on a mountainside by himself to pray, Matthew 14, 23. Jesus entered a house and did not want anyone to know it. And that is not like a breaking and entering thing. That's like he was there and just didn't want others to know he was there. Okay. Jesus went out as usual to the Mount of Olives. They went to a place called Gethsemane, and Jesus said to his disciples, "Sit here while I pray." So there's even this really cool time where Jesus recognizes the need that he and his disciples, his comrades, they have for silence and solitude as well. It says, then, because so many people were coming and going that they did not even have a chance to eat, he, meaning Jesus, said to them, "Come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest." So they went away by themselves in a boat to a solitary place. See, getting away was just a rhythm for Jesus. He went out on mountains, he went by lakes, he was in gardens, he was in houses. And he even had his usual spot, which I love. And he invited his disciples into it too. And he invites us. He wants us to meet with him there in the silence. And I understand that this is so much easier for some of us than others, right? Some of us have jobs where silence and solitude is kind of easy to come by, and work is really flexible, but some of us have jobs that are extremely structured and don't have much wiggle room. Some of us are parents of young kids, and it feels like nothing is silent, and we're never alone, and everything is sticky, and if you don't cut it out, we're going to turn this car around. You know, some of us, we have personalities that allow us to do this really naturally, and for others of us, we worry that, kind of like a shark, if we stop moving for even a moment, we're going to die. I'm really fortunate to have a job where practicing silence and prayer is kind of like part of my job. But it's also something that personally I'm really drawn to. I love spending time at the White River by myself, reading and praying. And I do try to spend some of that time every time in silence. And so over the years, I've developed some tips for silence that I'm going to share with you. We're going to break these down a little bit. The first one is pretty self-explanatory. Don't speak. It's not always easy, but it is straightforward. Don't speak. Don't make up dumb little songs. And then the second one is pretty Self-explanatory too. Turn off or put away the noises and distractions that are in your control. So you turn off the TV, you turn off the radio, you close the computer, you turn off the iPad, whatever. The next one is maybe just for me, but limiting your movement, because I have found that I can make all sorts of fun noises with my body when I'm supposed to be being quiet. And I don't mean what you're thinking. Like my bald head up here, it's so satisfying. And there's this whooshing sound that happens. It's like being on the beach. Or if you put your finger in your ear, you can make like a cacophony of different sounds. But for the sake of this, don't do that. Limit your body movement. And then finally, you just notice and let go of the noises and distractions that are not in your control, right? If you hear birds or you hear the wind or you hear a car drive by and they've got DMX blasting out the windows, just notice it. If you're here in Muncie and honestly, you're going to hear a train, just notice it. Try to let it go. If you find your mind drifting, there's a couple of simple phrases that I've found to be helpful where you just say, here I am. Or you say, I am here. There's flexibility there. And if it's too hard and in the moment it's just too loud, just take a break and try again later. Because when I'm at my spot in the river and a train goes by, I just got to stop and watch that train. I'm not thinking about anything else, and that's okay. Some of us were hesitant to try this silence and solitude thing because we're afraid of what we might find. In silent prayer, we can notice things that we'd rather ignore. We can find little or big pockets of sadness, disappointment, hurt, guilt, anger, loneliness, and those things can bubble up to the surface. But noticing these things, that can be an invitation into prayer. Adele Aylberg Calhoun says, like a can opener, the silence opens up the contents of our heart, allowing us deeper access to God than we experience at other times. Some of us, we don't accept the invitation into silence and solitude because we feel like it's just wasting time. It feels lavish. It can feel unproductive, and that feels bad and sometimes even wrong. But the world can go on without me, without you for 5 minutes, for an hour, for a weekend. And setting aside time for silence and solitude is actually a great way to lean in and trust in God's provision. And I just want to say this too. Oftentimes, when we pray and enter into a time of silence with God, it's going to appear like nothing's happening and nothing's changing. And that's okay too, right? Again, not to brag, but this is something I do quite often, and it's really rare for me to have some kind of life-changing encounter with God in the silence right then. But what the quiet often does is it sets us up. It prepares us for what he has for us. Jesus told his disciples in John 16:12, I have much more to say to you, more than you can now bear. It's the Holy Spirit's job to keep up the inner process and work of connecting with us and revealing things to us, but we have the chance to cooperate and to put ourselves in a place to deeply and reflectively listen. And so as a part of our experience this morning, I want us to practice this. I mean, you're here already. I was going to encourage you to do it this week anyway. So let's do it together. You can cross it off your weekly to-do list, all you go-getters out there. We are going to spend some time in silence. We're going to take a second to turn our phones all the way off. Just for 10 or so minutes, maybe less, maybe it won't be more. And often in church, our temptation is to play some kind of like, like synth pad, or for me to start playing an acoustic guitar. And we're not going to do that either. We're going to actually be silent. So we're going to dim the lights, and you can close your eyes or you can keep them open. You can go back and forth between the two things. If you fall asleep, that's actually okay. It's your body realizing how tired you are. And that awareness is good, and I just want you to rest in his caring arms. So settle in, sit in a comfortable position, and take a few deep breaths. As you become quiet, take a moment to notice what you do here. And let that noise go. Continue to let the quiet deepen and be with God. And if you want something to contemplate, you can focus on these words. Be still and know that I am God. Part of silence is letting words go, and so I would encourage you to let some words and phrases go from this and work through it like this. Be still and know that I am God. Be still and know. Be still. Be. I hope that you're able to practice silence this week and just notice what happens to you. God gives us these practices because they're good. And the benefits of being silent, they're often seen in the fruit that it bears rather than in the experience itself. Right? We have a chance to be still. Or not. Would you stand with me as you're able, and we'll pray. Father God, thank you for this morning. Jesus, help us to be still as you were and to know that you have us. Spirit, continue to do good work in us and meet us and guide us. Thank you for my friends here this morning, and as we journey together, would you give us peace and rest and renew our souls? Help us accept your invitation to meet with you in silence. Help us to know we don't need to bring our words, we just need to bring ourselves. Amen. Thank you all for being here today, for doing that experience with us, and we hope to see you back next week for our final message on uncommon prayer.